Chapter 73 Pegs. Not long after the apple was gone, Denna and I pulled our feet out of the water and gathered ourselves to leave. I considered leaving off my boots, as feet that can run bare over Tarbian's rooftops are in no danger of being hurt by the roughest forest floor. But I didn't want to appear uncivilized, so I pulled on my socks despite the fact that they were damp and clammy with sweat. I was lacing up my boot when I heard a faint noise off in the forest, out of sight behind a stand of thick pine trees. Quietly, I reached out to Denna, touched her shoulder lightly to get her attention, and held my finger to my lips. "What?" she mouthed silently. I moved closer, stepping carefully to make as little sound as possible. "I think I hear something," I said, my head close to hers. "I'm going to go have a look." "Like hell you are," she whispered, her face pale in the shadow of the pines. "That's exactly what Ash said before he left last night. I'll be damned if you're going to disappear on me, too." Before I could reply, I heard more movement through the trees, brush rustling, the sharp snap of a dry pine branch. As the noise got louder, I could pick out the sound of something big breathing heavily, then a low animal grunt. Not human, not the Chandrian. My relief was short-lived as I heard another grunt and some snuffling. A wild boar, probably heading for the river. "Get behind me," I said to Denna. Most people don't realize how dangerous wild boars are, especially in the fall, when the males are fighting for dominance. Sympathy wouldn't be any good. I had no source, no link. I didn't have so much as a stout stick. Would it be distracted by the few apples I had left? The boar shouldered aside the low-hanging boughs of the nearby pine, snuffling and huffing. It probably weighed twice as much as me. It gave a great guttural grunt as it looked up and saw us. It lifted its head, nose wriggling, trying to catch our scent. "Don't run, or it'll chase you," I said softly, stepping slowly in front of Denna. At a loss for anything better, I brought out my folding knife and worked it open with my thumb. "Just back up and get into the river. They aren't good swimmers." "I don't think she's dangerous," Denna said in a normal tone behind me. "She looks more curious than angry." She paused. "Not that I don't appreciate your noble urges and all." At second glance, I saw Denna was right. It was a sow, not a boar, and under a patina of mud, it was the pink of a domestic pig, not the brown bristle of a wild one. Bored, it lowered its head and began to root around among the shrubbery below the pines. Only then did I realize I was poised in a sort of half-crouch, one hand out like a wrestler. In the other hand, I held my pitiful folding knife, so small it needed several runs at halving a good-sized apple. Worst of all, I was only wearing one boot. I looked ridiculous, crazy as Elodin on his worst day. My face flushed hot, and I knew I must be red as a beet. Merciful Talu, I feel like an idiot. "It's rather flattering, actually," Denna said. "With the exception of some rather irritating posturing in bars, I don't know if I've ever had anyone actually leap to my defense before." "Yes, of course." I kept my eyes down as I tugged on my other sock and boot, too embarrassed to look her in the eye. It's every girl's dream to be rescued from someone's pet pig. "I'm serious." I looked up and saw some gentle amusement in her face, but no mocking. "You looked fierce, like a wolf with all its hackles up." She stopped, looking up at my head. "Or a fox, I suppose. You're too red for a wolf." I relaxed a bit. A bristling fox is better than a deranged, half-shod idiot. "You're holding your knife wrong, though," she said matter-of-factly, nodding toward my hand. "If you actually stabbed anyone, your grip would slip and you'd cut your own thumb." Reaching out, she took hold of my fingers and moved them slightly. "If you hold it like this, your thumb is safe. The downside is that you lose a lot of the mobility in your wrist." "Been in a lot of knife fights, have you?" I asked, bemused. "Not as many as you might think," she said with a sly smile. "It's another page out of that worn book you men are so fond of using to court us." She rolled her eyes, exasperated. "I can't count the men who have tried to seduce me away from my virtue by teaching me how to defend it." "I've never seen you wearing a knife," I pointed out. "Why is that?" "Why would I wear a knife?" Denna asked. "I am a delicate blossom and all that. A woman who goes around wearing a knife is obviously looking for trouble." She reached deep into her pocket and brought out a long, slender piece of metal, glittering all along one edge. "However, a woman who carries a knife is ready for trouble. Generally speaking, it's easier to appear harmless. It's less trouble all around." Only the fact that she was so matter-of-fact kept me from being startled. Her knife wasn't much larger than mine, but hers wasn't a folding knife. It was a straight piece of metal, with thin leather wrapping the grip. It clearly wasn't designed for eating or performing odd jobs around the campfire. It looked more like one of the razor-sharp surgical knives from the Medica. "How do you keep that in your pocket without cutting yourself to shreds?" I asked. Denna turned sideways to show me. "My pocket is slit all along the inside. It straps to my leg. That's why it's so flat. So you can't see I'm wearing it." She gripped the leather handle and held her knife in front of her for me to see. "Like this. You want to keep your thumb along the flat." "Are you trying to seduce me away from my virtue by teaching me how to defend it?" I asked. "Like you have any virtue," she laughed. "I'm trying to keep you from cutting up your pretty hands the next time you have to save a girl from a pig." She cocked her head to the side. "Speaking of, did you know that when you're angry, your eyes..." "No, pegs!" A voice came through the trees, accompanied by the dull clank of a bell. "Peg, peg, peg, peg!" The great sow perked up and trotted back through the brush toward the sound of the voice. Denna took a moment to replace her knife while I picked up my travel sack. Following the pig through the trees, we spotted a man downstream with a half dozen large sows milling around him. There was an old bristling boar, too, and a score of assorted piglets scampering underfoot. The swineherd eyed us suspiciously. "Hello!" he shouted. "Don't be afeard! They want bait!" He was lean and leathery from the sun, with a scraggling beard. His long stick had a crude bronze bell hanging from it, and he wore a tattered bag over one shoulder. He smelled better than you'd probably expect, as ranging pigs keep themselves cleaner than those kept penned. Even if he had smelled like a penned pig, I couldn't really hold it against him, as I had no doubt smelled worse at various points in my life.
"I thought I heard some of Dan did a water race," he said,
his accent so thick and oily you could almost taste it. My mother referred to it as a deep valley accent, since you only found them in towns that didn't have much contact with the outside world. Even in small rural towns like Traben, folk didn't have much of an accent these days. Living in Tarbian and Imre for so long, I hadn't heard a dialect this thick in years. The fellow must have grown up in a truly remote location, probably tucked far back into the mountains. He came up to where we stood, his weathered face grim as he squinted at us.
"What are they doing out here?" he said suspiciously. "I thought I heard singing."
"That were me cousin," I said, making a nod toward Denna.
"She had to have a lovely voice for skrilling, didn't she?"
I held out my hand.
"I'm a great glad to meet you, sir. You clap me quoth."
He looked taken aback when he heard me speak, and a good portion of the grim suspicion faded from his expression.
"Please, I'm certain, Master Quoth,"
he said, shaking my hand.
"It's a rare treat to meet a fellow who speaks proper. Gummers round these parts don't like to call a mouthful of wool."
I laughed.
"My father used to say, wool in the mouth and wool in the head."
He grinned and shook my hand.
"My name is Skyvan Shimmelfinnick."
"You've got the name enough for a king," I said. "Would you be terrible offended if I pared it down to Shim?"
"All my friends there."
He grinned at me, clapping me on the back.
"Shim would do fine for lovely young folk like yourselves."
He looked back and forth between Denna and myself. Denna, much to her credit, hadn't so much as batted an eye at my sudden change in dialect.
"Forgive me,"
I said, making a gesture in her direction.
"Shim, this is my most favorite cousin.
Dinna,
Dinna said. I dropped my voice to a stage whisper.
Ah, sweet lass, but she is terrible shy. You won't be hearing Mickle out of here, I'm afeard.
Dinna picked up her part without the least hesitation, looking down at her feet and twining her fingers together nervously. She glanced up long enough to smile at the swineherd, then dropped her eyes again, making such a picture of awkward bashfulness that I was almost fooled myself. Shim touched his forehead politely and nodded.
"Pleased to meet you, Dinna. I ain't never heard a voice so lovely in all me life," he said,
pushing his shapeless hat back onto his head a bit. When Dinna still wouldn't meet his eye, he turned back to me.
"Fine looking herd,"
I nodded in the direction of the scattered pigs that were meandering through the trees. He shook his head, chuckling.
"Nay, herd. Sheps and cows make a herd. Pigs is a sounder."
"Is that so?"
I said.
"Is there a chance, friend Shim, that I might buy a fine wee pig from you? My cousin and I missed our dinner today."
"Might do,"
he said cautiously, his eyes flickering to my purse.
"If you dress it for us, I'll give you 4 jots,
I said, knowing it to be a generous price.
"But that's only if you'll do us a favour of sitting down and sharing a wee bit with us."
It was a casual testing of the waters. People in solitary jobs like shepherds or swineherds tend to either enjoy their own company or be starved for conversation. I hoped Shim was the latter. I needed information about the wedding, and none of the people in town seemed likely to talk. I gave him a sly grin and dipped my hand into my travel sack, bringing out the bottle of brand I'd bought from the tinker.
"We've even got a dram of something to season it, if you're not opposed to taking a drop with a couple of strangers early in the day."
Dinna caught her cue and glanced up in time to catch Shem's eye, smile shyly, then look down again.
"Well, may mother raise me proper,"
the swineherd said piously, laying a hand flat on his chest.
"I don't drink, but when I'm thirsty, and when the wind's blowing."
He tipped his shapeless hat dramatically off his head and made a half bow to us.
"You seem to be good folk. I'd love to share a bit of dinner with you."
Shem collared a young pig and carried it off a ways, where he killed and dressed it using a long knife from his bag. I cleared away leaves and stacked some rocks to make a quick fire pit. After a minute, Dinna came back over with an armload of dry wood.
"I assume we're pumping this fellow for every scrap of information we can get," she said quietly over my shoulder.
I nodded.
"Sorry about the shy cousin bit, but no, it was good thinking. I don't speak fluent bumpkin, and he'll be more likely to open up to someone who does."
Her eyes flickered behind me.
"He's almost done."
She wandered away toward the river. I covertly used some sympathy to start the fire, while Dinna cobbled together a couple cooking skewers out of forked willow branches. Shem returned with the piglet, neatly quartered. I passed around the bottle of brand while the pig cooked over the fire, smoking and dripping fat onto the coals. I made a show of drinking, just raising the bottle and wetting my mouth. Dinna tipped it when it passed her by as well, and there was some rosy color in her cheeks afterward. Shem was as good as his word, and since the wind was blowing, it wasn't too long before his nose was comfortably red. Shem and I chatted about nothing in particular until the pig was crispy and crackling on the outside. The more I listened, the more Shem's accent faded into the back of my awareness, and I didn't need to concentrate so much on maintaining my own. By the time the pig was done, I was hardly aware of it at all.
"You're right handy with a knife," I complimented Shem. "But I'm surprised you'd got the little fella right here with the pigs close by."
He shook his head.
"Pigs is vicious bastards."
He pointed to one of the sows trotting over to the patch of ground where he'd dressed the pig.
"See? She's after this little one's lights. Pigs is clever, but they ain't a touch sentimental."
Declaring the pig nearly done, Shem brought out a round farmer's loaf and shared it three ways.
"Mutton," he grumbled to himself. "Who wants mutton when you can have a nice piece of bacon?"
He got to his feet and began to carve the pig with his long knife.
"What would you like, little lady?"
Shem said to Dinna.
"I'm na partial myself," she said. "I'll take whatever you have handy there."
I was glad Shem wasn't looking at me when she spoke. Her accent wasn't perfect, a little too long on the O's and too tight in the back of the throat, but it was really quite good.
"Nay need to be shy about it," Shem said. "There'll be plenty and to spare."
"I've always had a liking for the hinder parts myself," Dennis said, then flushed in embarrassment and looked down. Her O's were better this time.
Shem showed his true gentlemanly nature by refraining from any crude comments as he lay a thick slice of steaming meat atop her piece of bread.
"Mind your fingers. Give it a minute to cool."
Everyone set to. Shem served up seconds, then thirds. Before too long, we were licking the grease from our fingers and filling in the corners. I decided to get to business. If Shem wasn't ready for some gossip now, he never would be.
"I'm surprised to see you out and about with all the bad business lately." "What business is that?" he asked.
He didn't know about the wedding massacre yet. Perfect. While he couldn't give me particulars about the attack itself, it meant he would be more willing to talk about the events leading up to the wedding, even if everyone in town wasn't scared to death. I doubted I'd be able to find anyone willing to speak with frank honesty about the dead.
"I heard they had some trouble up on the Muffin Farm," I said, keeping my information as vague and inoffensive as possible.
He snorted.
"Can't say as I find that startling in the least."
"How's that?"
Shem spat to the side.
"Muffins are a right lot of bastards. I know better than they should be."
He shook his head again.
"I keep off barrow well because I got one lick of good sense me mum beat into me. Muffin didn't even have that."
It wasn't until I heard Shem say the name of the place in his thick accent that I heard it properly. It wasn't Borough Rill. It had nothing to do with a rill. It was Barrow Hill.
"I don't even graze me pegs up there. But that daft bastard built a house."
He shook his head, disgusted.
"Didn't folk try and stop him?"
Denna prompted. The swineherd made a rude noise.
"Muffin ain't much for listening. Nothing plugs a man's ears like money."
"Still, it's just a house," I said dismissively.
"Nay much harm in that. Man wants his daughter to have a fine house with a view. That's all the good,"
Shem conceded.
"But when you're digging a foundation and you find bones and such and you don't stop, that's a whole new type of stupid."
"He didn't,"
Dennis said aghast. Shem nodded, leaning forward.
"And that weren't the worst of it. He keeps digging, and he hits stones. Then does he stop?"
He sniffed.
"He starts pulling them up, looking for more so he can use them for the house."
"Why wouldn't he want to use the stones he found?" I asked.
Shem looked at me like I was daft.
"Would you build a house with barrow stones? Would you dig something out of the barrow and give it to your daughter as a wedding present?"
"He found something. What was it?" I passed him the bottle.
"Well, that's the great damn secret, ain't it?"
Shem said bitterly, taking another drink.
"From what I hear, he was out there, digging the house foundation and pulling up stones. Then he finds a little stone room all sealed up tight. But he makes everybody keep mum about what he finds her on account of he wants it to be his great surprise at the wedding."
"Some sort of treasure?"
I asked.
"Nah, money,"
he shook his head.
"Muffin's never been quiet about that. It were probably some sort of..."
His mouth opened and closed a bit, searching for a word.
"What do you call something old the rich folk put on a shelf to impress all their grummer friends?"
I gave a helpless shrug.
"An heirloom,"
Denna said. Shem laid his finger alongside his nose, then pointed to her, smiling.
"That's it. Some flash thing to impress folk. He's a shy bastard, Muffin is."
"So nobody knew what it was?" I asked. Shem nodded.
"There was only the handful that know. Muffin and his brother. Two of the sons, and maybe his wife. The lot of them been lording a big secret over folk for half a year, smug as pontiffs."
This cast everything in a new light. I needed to get back up to the farm and look at things again.
"Have you seen anyone round these parts today?"
Denna asked.
"We're looking for my uncle."
Shem shook his head.
"Can't say as I've had the pleasure."
"I'm really worried about him,"
she pressed.
"I won't lie to you, dearie," he said. You got reason to be worried if he's alone in these woods.
Are there bad folk around? I asked.
Nae like you're a-thinking, he said. I didn't get down here but once a year in the fall. Forage for the hogs make it worth me while, but only just. There's strange things in these woods, special after the north.
He looked at Denna, then down at his feet, obviously unsure as to whether or not he should continue. This is exactly the sort of thing I wanted to know about, so I waved his comment away, hoping to provoke him.
Don't go telling us fairy stories, Shem.
Shem frowned.
2 nights ago, when I got up to...
He hesitated, glancing at Denna.
Attend to my personals. I saw lights off to the north. A big wash of blue flame, big as a bonfire. But all of a sudden,
he snapped his fingers.
Then nothing. Happened 3 times. Sent a chill right down the middle of me back.
2 nights ago, I asked. The wedding had only been last night.
I said 2 nights, didn't I?
Shem said.
We've been making my way south ever since. I want nae part of whatever is making blue fire in the night up there.
Shem, really? Blue fire?
I'm not some lying roe, spinning stories to scare you out of pennies, boy,
he said, plainly irritated.
I spend me whole life in these hills. Everyone knows that there's something out in the north bluffs. There's a reason folks stay away from there.
Aren't there any farms out there? I asked.
There's no place to farm in the bluffs unless you're growing rocks, he said hotly. You think I don't know a candle or a campfire when I see one? I was blue, I tell ya. Great billows of it.
He made an expansive gesture with his arms.
Like when you pour liquor on a fire.
I let it go and turned the conversation elsewhere. Before too long, Shem gave a deep sigh and got to his feet.
The pegs will have picked this place clean by now,
he said, picking up his walking stick and shaking it so the crude bell clanked loudly. Pigs came trotting up obediently from all directions.
No, pigs! He shouted. Pigs, pigs, pigs! Come on, you cunts!
I wrapped up the remains of the cooked pig in a piece of sackcloth, and Denna made a few trips with the water bottle and doused the fire. By the time we were finished, Shem had his sounder in order. It was larger than I'd thought. More than 2 dozen full-grown sows, plus the young pigs and the boar with the gray, bristling back. He gave a brief wave and, without any further word, headed off, the bell on his walking stick clanking as he walked and his pigs trailing in a loose mob behind him.
Well, that wasn't terribly subtle, Denna said.
I had to push him a bit, I said. Superstitious folk don't like to talk about things they're afraid of. He was about to clam up, and I needed to know what he'd seen in the forest.
I could have gotten it out of him, she said.
More flies with honey and all that.
You probably could have, I admitted as I shouldered my travel sack and began to walk.
I thought you said you didn't speak, bumpkin.
I've got a mimic's ear, she said with an indifferent shrug. I pick up things like that pretty quickly.
Surprise the hell out of Moy, I spat.
Damn! I'm going to be a whole span of days getting rid of that accent, like a piece of gristle in my teeth.
Denna was eyeing the surrounding landscape despondently.
I guess we should get back to beating the bushes, then. Find my patron and find you some answers.
No point, really, I said.
I know, but I can't give up without at least trying.
That's not what I mean. Look. I pointed to where the pigs had rooted around in the dirt and leaves, going after some choice morsel.
He's been letting his pigs graze all over. Even if there is a trail, we'd never find it.
She drew a long breath and let it out in a tired sigh.
Is there anything left in that bottle? She asked wearily. My head still aches.
I'm an idiot, I said, looking around. I wish you'd mentioned it was bothering you sooner. I walked over to a young birch tree, cut off several long strips of bark, and brought them back to her. The inside of the bark is a good painkiller.
You're a handy fellow to have around.
She peeled some off with a fingernail and put it in her mouth. She wrinkled her nose.
Bitter?
That's how you know it's real medicine, I said. If it tasted good, it would be candy.
Isn't that the way of the world? She said. We want the sweet things, but we need the unpleasant ones. She smiled when she said it, but only with her mouth. Speaking of, she said, how am I going to find my patron? I'm open to suggestions. I have an idea, I said, shouldering my travel sack. But first, we need to head back up to the farm. There's something I need to take a second look at. We made our way back to the top of Barrow Hill, and I saw how it had come by its name. Odd, irregular lumps rose and fell despite the fact that there weren't any other rocks nearby. Now that I was looking for them, they were impossible to miss. What is it you needed to look at? Dennis said. Realize that if you attempt to go inside the house, I might be forced to physically restrain you. Look at the house, I said. Now look at the bluff that's sticking out of the trees behind it. I pointed. The rock around here is dark. And the stones of the house are gray, she finished. I nodded. She continued to look at me expectantly. And that means what, exactly? Like he said, they found barrow stones. There aren't any barrows around here, I said. People build barrows in Vintas, where it's traditional, or in low, marshy places where you can't dig a grave. We're probably 500 miles away from a real barrow. I walked closer to the farmhouse. Besides, you don't use stones to build barrows. Even if you did, you wouldn't use quarried Finnish stone like this. This was brought from a long ways off. I ran a hand over the smooth gray stones of the wall. Because someone wanted to build something that would last. Something solid. I turned back to face Denna. I think there's an old hill fort buried here. Denna thought about it for a moment. Why would they call it Barrow Hill if there weren't real barrows? Probably because folk around here haven't ever seen a real barrow, just heard about them in stories. When they find a hill with big mounds on it, I pointed out the oddly shaped hillocks, Barrow Hill. But this is nowhere, she looked around aimlessly. This is the outside edge of nowhere. Now it is, I agreed. But back when this was built, I gestured to a break in the trees to the north of the burned farmhouse. Come over here for a second. I want to look at something else. Walking past the trees on the northern ridge of the hill gave a gorgeous view of the surrounding countryside. The red and yellow of autumn leaves were breathtaking. I could see a few houses and barns scattered about, surrounded by golden fields or pale green pieces of pasture with dots of white sheep. I could see the stream where Denna and I had dandled our feet. Looking north, I could see the bluffs Shem had mentioned. The land looked rougher there. I nodded mostly to myself. You can see 30 miles in every direction here. The only hill with a better view is that one. I pointed to a tall hill obscuring my view of the northern bluffs. And that one practically comes to a point. It's too narrow on top for any decent-sized fortification. She looked around thoroughly, then nodded. Fair enough, you've sold me. There was a hill fort here. What now? Well, I'd like to make it to the top of that hill before we set camp tonight. I pointed at the tall, narrow hill that was currently hiding part of the bluffs from our sight. It's only a mile or two, and if there's anything strange going on in the north bluffs, we'll have a clear view of it from there. I thought for a moment. Plus, if Ash is anywhere within 20 miles, he could see our fire and come to us. If he's trying to keep a low profile and doesn't want to go into town, he might still approach a campfire. Denna nodded. That certainly beats the hell out of stumbling around in the brush. I have my moments, I said, making a grand gesture down the hill. Please, ladies first. Chapter 74 Waystone. Despite our general weariness, Denna and I made good time and came to the top of the northern hill just as the sun was setting behind the mountains. Though trees ringed the hill on all sides, its peak was bald as a priest's head. The unrestricted view in all directions was breathtaking. My only regret is that the clouds had blown in while we walked, leaving the sky flat and gray as slate. To the south, I could see a handful of small farms. A few streams and narrow roads cut meandering paths through the trees.
The western mountains were like a distant wall. To the south and east, I could see smoke rising into the sky and the low, brown buildings of Traben. Turning north, I saw that what the swineherd had said was true. There were no signs of human habitation in that direction. No roads or farms or chimney smoke. Just increasingly rough ground, exposed rock, and trees clinging to the bluffs. The only thing on the top of the hill was a handful of gray stones. Three of the massive stones were stacked together to form a huge arch, like a massive doorway. The other two lay on their sides, as if lounging in the thick grass. I found their presence comforting, like the unexpected company of old friends. Denna sat on one of the fallen gray stones as I stood looking out over the countryside. I felt a slight prickle of rain against my face and muttered a curse, flipping the hood of my cloak up. "It won't last long," Denna said. "It's done this the last couple nights. Clouds up, soaks for about half an hour, then blows over." "Good," I said. "I hate sleeping in the rain." I set my travel sack on the leeward side of one of the graystones, and the two of us began to set up camp. We each went about our business, as if we'd done this 100 times before. Denna cleared a space for a fire and gathered stones. I brought back an armload of wood and got the fire going quickly. On my next trip, I gathered some sage and dug up a few wild onions I'd noticed on the way up the hill. The rain came down hard, then tapered off as I started to make supper. I used my small cookpot to make a stew with the leftover pork from lunch, some carrots and potatoes, and the onions I'd found. I seasoned it with salt, pepper, and sage, then warmed a loaf of flatbread near the fire and broke open the wax on the cheese. Last of all, I tucked 2 apples in among the hot rocks of the fire. They'd be baked in time for dessert. By the time dinner was ready, Denna had amassed a small mountain of firewood. I spread out my blanket for her to sit on, and she made appreciative noises over the food as we set about eating. "A girl could get used to this sort of treatment," Denna said after we'd finished. She leaned contentedly back against one of the gray stones. "If you had your lute here, you could sing me to sleep and everything would be perfect." "I met a tinker on the road this morning and he tried to sell me a bottle of fruit wine," I said. "I wish I'd taken him up on his offer." "I love fruit wine," she said. "Was it strawberry?" "I think it was," I admitted. "Well, that's what you get for not listening to a tinker on the road," she chided, her eyes drowsy. "Clever boy like you has heard enough stories to know better." She sat up suddenly, pointing over my shoulder. "Look!" I turned. "What am I looking for?" I asked. The sky was still thick with clouds, so the surrounding countryside was just a sea of black. "Just keep looking. Maybe it will..." "There!" I saw it, a flicker of blue light off in the distance. I got to my feet and put the fire behind me so it wouldn't dull my vision. Denna came to stand beside me, and we waited breathlessly for a moment. Another swell of blue light, stronger. "What do you think that is?" I asked. "I'm pretty sure all the iron mines are off to the west," Denna mused. "It can't be that." There was another flare. It did seem to be coming from the bluffs, which meant that if it was a flame, it was a big one, at least several times larger than our own fire. "You said your patron had a way of signaling you," I said slowly. "I don't mean to pry, but it's not..." "No, it's nothing to do with blue fire," she said with a low chuckle at my discomfiture. "That would be altogether too sinister, even for him." We watched for a while longer, but it didn't happen again. I took a branch about as big around as my thumb, broke it in half, then used a rock to pound both halves into the earth like tent stakes. Denna raised a questioning eyebrow. "It points toward where we saw the light," I said. "I can't see any landmarks in this dark, but in the morning this will show us what direction it was in." We reclaimed our previous seats, and I threw more wood on the fire, sending sparks twinkling up into the air. "One of us should probably stay up with the fire," I said, "in case anyone shows up." "I don't tend to sleep through the night anyway," Denna said, "so that shouldn't be a problem." "You have trouble sleeping?" "I have dreams," she said in a tone of voice that made it clear that was all she had to say on the subject.
I picked at some brown burr that clung to the edge of my cloak, pulling it out and tossing it into the fire. I think I've got an idea about what happened at the Mothin farm. She perked up. Do tell. The question is, why would the Chandrian attack at that specific place and time? The wedding, obviously. But why this particular wedding? Why this night? Why don't you just tell me? Dennis said, rubbing her forehead. Don't try to tease me into some sort of sudden burst of understanding like you're my schoolmaster. I felt myself flush hot with embarrassment again. I'm sorry. Don't be. Normally, I'd love nothing more than some witty back and forth with you, but I've had a long day and my head aches. Just skip to the end. It's whatever Mothin found while he was digging up the old hill fort, looking for stones, I said. He dug something out of the ruins and gossiped about it for months. The Chandrian heard and showed up to steal it. I finished with a bit of a flourish. Denna frowned. Doesn't hold together. If all they wanted was the item, they could have waited until after the wedding and just killed the newlyweds. Much easier. That took some of the wind out of my sails. You're right. It would make more sense if what they really wanted was to get rid of all knowledge of the thing. Like old King Ceylon when he thought his regent was going to expose him for treason. Killed the fellow's whole family and burned down their estate to make sure no word got out or evidence was left for anyone to find. Denna gestured off to the south. Since everyone who knew the secret would be at the wedding, the Chandrian can come in, kill everyone who knows anything, and either destroy or steal whatever it is. She made a motion with the flat of her hand. Clean sweep. I sat stunned. Not so much by what Denna had said, which was, of course, better than my own guess. I was remembering what had happened to my own troop. Someone's parents have been singing entirely the wrong sort of songs. But they hadn't just killed my parents. They killed everyone who had been close enough to hear even a part of the song. Denna rolled herself into my blanket and curled up with her back to the fire. I will allow you to ponder my vast cleverness while I sleep. Wake me when you need anything else figured out. I stayed awake mostly through an effort of will. I'd had a long, grueling day, riding 60 miles and walking a half dozen more. But Denna was hurt and needed her sleep more. Besides, I wanted to keep an eye out for any more signs of the blue light to the north. There weren't any. I fed the fire and wondered vaguely if Will and Sim were worried about my sudden disappearance back at the university. What of Arwill and Elksadal and Kilvin? Would they wonder what happened to me? I should have left a note. I had no way to track the time, as the clouds still hid the stars, but I had fed the fire at least 6 or 7 times when I saw Denna stiffen and come suddenly awake. She didn't bolt upright, but her breathing stopped, and I saw her dark eyes dart about wildly, as if she didn't know where she was. Sorry, I said, mostly to give her something familiar to focus on. Did I wake you? She relaxed and sat up. No. Not at all. I'm done sleeping for a bit. You want a turn? She rubbed at her eyes and peered at me over the fire. Silly question. You look like hell. She began to unwrap the blanket from around herself. Here. I waved it off. Keep it. My cloak is good enough for me. I put my hood up and lay down on the grass. What a gentleman, she teased gently, wrapping it across her shoulders. I pillowed my head with my arm, and while I was trying to think of a clever response, I fell asleep. I woke from a dim dream of moving through a crowded street to the sight of Denna's face above me, rosy and sharply shadowed by the firelight. All in all, a very pleasant way to wake up. I was about to say something to that effect when she put her finger over my lips, distracting me in about 18 different ways.
Quiet, she said softly. Listen.
I sat up.
Do you hear it?
She asked after a moment. I cocked my head.
Just the wind.
She shook her head and cut me off with a gesture.
There!
I did hear it. At first, I thought it was some disturbed rock sliding down the hill, but no. This didn't fade into the distance like that would.
it sounded more like something being dragged up the side of the hill. I got to my feet and looked around. While I'd slept, the clouds had blown away, and now the moon lit the surrounding countryside in pale silver light. Our wide fire pit was brim full of shimmering coals. Just then, not far down the hillside, I heard... To say I heard a branch breaking would mislead you. When a person moving through the woods breaks a branch, it makes a short, sharp snap. This is because any branch a man breaks accidentally is small and breaks quickly. What I heard was no twig snapping. It was a long, cracking sound, the sound a leg-thick branch makes when it is torn from a tree. Creak, crick, crick, crack! Then as I turned to look at Denna, I heard the other noise. How can I describe it? When I was young, my mother took me to see a menagerie in Senneran. It was the only time I had ever seen a lion, and the only time I had heard one roar. The other children in the crowd were frightened, but I laughed, delighted. The sound was so deep and low that I could feel it rumble in my chest. I loved the feeling and remember it to this day. The sound I heard on the hill near Traben was not a lion's roar, but I felt it in my chest the same way. It was a grunt, deeper than a lion's roar, closer to the sound of thunder in the distance. Another branch broke, almost on the crest of the hill. I looked in that direction and saw a huge shape dimly lined by the firelight. I felt the ground shudder slightly under my feet. Denna turned to look at me, her eyes wide with panic. I grabbed hold of her arm and ran toward the opposite side of the hill. Denna kept up with me at first, then planted her feet when she saw where I was headed.
"Don't be stupid," she hissed. "We'll break our necks if we run down that in the dark."
She cast around wildly, then looked up at the nearby graystones.
"Get me up there, and I'll haul you up after."
I laced my fingers together to make a step. She put her foot into it, and I heaved so hard I almost threw her into the air where she could catch the edge of the stone. I waited a brief moment until she swung her leg up, then I slung my travel sack over my shoulder and scrambled up the side of the massive stone. Rather, I should say I scrambled at the side of the massive stone. It was worn smooth by ages of weather and didn't have any handholds to speak of. I slid to the ground. My hands scrabbled ineffectually. I bolted to the other side of the arch, hopped up onto one of the lower stones, and made another leap. I hit the rock hard, all along the front of my body, knocking the wind out of me and banging my knee. My hands gripped at the top of the arch, but I couldn't find any purchase. Denna caught me. If this were some heroic ballad, I would tell you how she clasped my hand firmly and pulled me to safety. But the truth is, she got hold of my shirt with one hand, while the other hand made a tight fist in my hair. She hauled hard to keep me from falling long enough for me to catch a grip and scramble to the top of the stone with her. As we lay there panting, we peered over the edge of the stone. Down on the hilltop, the dim shape was beginning to move into the circle of our firelight. Half hidden in the shadows, it looked larger than any animal I had ever seen, as big as a loaded wagon. It was black, with a massive body like a bull's. It came closer, moving in an odd shuffle, not like a bull or a horse. The wind fanned the fire, causing it to flare up, and I saw it carried its thick body close to the ground, legs out to the side, like a lizard. When it came farther into the light, the comparison was impossible to avoid. It was a huge lizard, not long like a snake. It was squat, like a cinder brick, its thick neck blending into a head shaped like a massive flat wedge. It covered half the distance from the crest of the hill to our fire in a single spastic burst of speed. It grunted again, deep like rumbling thunder, and I felt it in my chest. As it came closer, it moved past the other graystone that lay in the grass, and I realized my eyes weren't playing tricks on me. It was bigger than the graystone, 6 feet high at the shoulder, 15 feet long, big as a horse cart, massive as a dozen bulls tied together. It moved its thick head back and forth, working its wide mouth open and closed, tasting the air. Then there was a burst of blue flame.
The sudden light of it was blinding, and I heard Denna cry out beside me. I ducked my head and felt a wash of heat roll over us. Rubbing at my eyes, I looked down again and saw the thing move closer to the fire. It was black, scaled, massive. It grunted again like thunder, then bobbed its head and breathed another great gout of billowing blue fire. It was a dragon. Chapter 75. Interlude. Obedience. In the Waystone Inn, Quoth paused expectantly. The moment stretched out until Chronicler looked up from his page. "I'm giving you the opportunity to say something," Quoth said. "Something along the lines of, 'That can't be,' or 'There's no such thing as dragons.'" Chronicler wiped the nib of his pen clean. "It's not really my place to comment on the story," he said placidly. "If you say you saw a dragon..." He shrugged. Quoth gave him a profoundly disappointed look. "This from the author of The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus. This from Devon Lockheys, the great debunker." "This from Devon Lockheys, who agreed not to interrupt or change a single word of the story he is recording." Chronicler lay his pen down and massaged his hand. "Because those were the only conditions under which he could get access to a story he very much desired." Quoth gave him a level look. "Have you ever heard the expression, white mutiny?"
"I have," Chronicler said with a thin smile.
"I could say it, Reshi," Bass said brightly. "I haven't agreed to anything." Quoth looked back and forth between them, then sighed. "There are few things as nauseating as pure obedience," he said. "Both of you would do well to remember that." He gestured for Chronicler to pick up his pen again. "Very well. It was a dragon." Chapter 76. The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus.
"It's a dragon," Denna whispered. "Tailu hold and overrule us. It's a dragon."
"It's not a dragon," I said. "There's no such thing as dragons."
"Look at it," she hissed at me. "It's right there. Look at the huge goddamn dragon."
"It's a Dracus," I said.
"It's goddamn huge,"
Denna said with a tinge of hysteria in her voice.
"It's a goddamn huge dragon. It's going to come over here and eat us."
"It doesn't eat meat," I said. "It's a herbivore. It's like a big cow." Denna looked at me and started to laugh. Not hysterical laughter, but the helpless laughter of someone who's just heard something so funny they can't help but bubble over with it. She put her hands over her mouth and shook with it. The only sound was a low huffing that escaped through her fingers. There was another flash of blue fire from below. Denna froze mid-laugh, then took her hands away from her mouth. She looked at me, her eyes wide, and spoke softly with a slight quaver in her voice.
"Moo."
We had both gone from terrified to safe so quickly that we were close to laughing from sheer relief anyway. So when she convulsed with laughter again, muffling it with her hands, I started to laugh too, my belly shaking as I tried not to make any noise. We lay there like two giggling children while below us the great beast grunted and snuffed around our fire, occasionally sending up gouts of flame. After a long several minutes, we regained control of ourselves. Denna wiped tears away from her eyes and drew a deep, shaky breath. She slid closer to me until the left side of her body was pressed close up against my right.
"Listen,"
she said softly as we both looked over the edge of the stone.
"That thing does not graze," she said. "It's huge. It could never get enough food. And look at its mouth. Look at those teeth."
"Exactly. They're flat, not pointed. It eats trees. Whole trees. Look at how big it is. Where could it possibly find enough meat? It would have to eat 10 deer every day. There's no way it could survive." She turned her head to look at me.
"How the hell do you know this?"
"I read about it at the university," I said. "A book called The Mating Habits of the Common Dracus. It uses the fire in a mating display. It's like a bird's plumage."
"You mean that thing down there?" She groped for words, her mouth working silently for a moment, "is going to try and top our campfire." She looked for a moment as if she was going to burst into laughter again, but she drew a deep, shuddering breath instead, regaining her composure. "Now that's something I have to see." We both felt a shudder in the stone underneath us, coming up from the ground below. At the same time, things grew noticeably darker. Looking down, we saw the Dracus rolling in the fire like a hog in a wallow. The ground shook as it wriggled around, crushing the fire underneath itself. "That thing must weigh..." Denna stalled out, shaking her head. "Maybe 5 tons, I guessed. 5 at least. "It could come get us. It could push over these stones." "I don't know about that," I said, slapping the stone under my hand, trying to sound more certain than I really was. "These have been here for a long time. We're safe." While rolling in our overlarge campfire, the Dracus had scattered burning branches around the top of the hill. It now wandered to where a half-charred log lay smoldering in the grass. The Dracus snuffed, then rolled, crushing the log into the earth. Then it came back to its feet, snuffed the log again, and ate it. It didn't chew, it bolted the log whole, like a frog getting a cricket down into its gullet. It did this several times, moving in a circle around the now largely extinguished fire. It snuffed, rolled on the burning pieces, then ate them after they were extinguished. "That makes sense, I suppose," Denna said, watching it. "It starts fires and lives in the woods. If it didn't have something in its head that made it want to put out fires, it wouldn't survive very long." "That's probably why it came here," I said. "It saw our fire." After several minutes of snuffing and rolling, the Dracus came back to the flat bed of coals that was all that remained of our fire. It circled it a few times, then walked over it and lay down. I cringed, but it just shifted back and forth like a hen settling into a nest. The hilltop below was now entirely dark, except for the pale moonlight. "How can I never have heard of these things?" Denna asked. "They're very rare," I said. "People tend to kill them because they don't understand they're relatively harmless, and they don't reproduce very quickly. That one down there is probably 200 years old, about as big as they get." I marveled at it. "I bet there aren't more than a couple hundred Dracus that size in the whole world." We watched for another couple minutes, but there was no movement from below. Denna gave a jaw-popping yawn. "Gods, I'm exhausted. There's nothing like the certain knowledge of your own death to tucker you out." She rolled over onto her back, then onto her side, then back facing toward me, trying to get comfortable. "Lord, it's cold up here." She shivered visibly. "I can see why it's cuddled up on our fire." "We could go down and get the blanket," I suggested. She snorted. "Not likely." She shivered visibly, wrapping her arms around her chest. "Here." I stood up and took off my cloak. "Wrap up in this. It's not much, but it's better than the bare stone." I held it out to her. "I'll watch you while you sleep, and make sure you don't fall off." She stared at me for a long moment, and I half expected her to beg off. But after a moment, she took it and wrapped it around herself. "You, Master Quoth, certainly know how to show a girl a good time." "Wait until tomorrow," I said. "I'm just getting started." I sat there quietly, trying not to shiver, and eventually Denna's breathing leveled off. I watched her sleep with the calm contentment of a boy who has no idea of how foolish he is, or what unexpected tragedies the following day will bring. Chapter 77. Bluffs. I woke without remembering when I had fallen asleep. Denna was shaking me gently. "Don't move too quickly," she said. "It's a long way down." I slowly uncurled, nearly every muscle in my body complaining at how it had been treated yesterday. My thighs and calves were tight, hard knots of pain. Only then did I realize I was wearing my cloak again. "Did I wake you up?" I asked Denna. "I don't remember." "In a way you did," she said. "You nodded off and tipped right on to me. You didn't even flicker a lid when I cussed you out.
Denna trailed off as she watched me slowly come to my feet.
Good Lord, you look like someone's arthritic grandfather.
You know how it is, I said. You're always stiffest when you wake up.
She smirked. We women folk don't have that problem as a rule.
Her expression grew serious as she watched me.
You're serious, aren't you?
I rode about 60 miles yesterday before I met up with you, I said. I'm not really used to that. And when I jumped last night, I hit the rock pretty hard.
Are you hurt?
Absolutely, I said. Especially in my everywhere.
Oh! She gasped, her hands going to her mouth. Your beautiful hands!
I looked down and saw what she meant. I must have hurt them rather badly in my wild attempt to climb the Greystone last night. My musician's calluses had saved my fingertips for the most part, but my knuckles were scraped badly and crusted with blood. Other parts of me hurt so much that I hadn't even noticed. My stomach clenched at the sight of them, but when I opened and closed my hands, I could tell they were just painfully skinned, not seriously injured. As a musician, I always worried that something might happen to my hands, and my work as an artificer had doubled that anxiety.
It looks worse than it is, I said.
How long has the Dracus been gone? I asked.
At least a couple hours. It wandered away a little after the sun came up.
I looked down from my high vantage on the Greystone Arch. Last evening, the hilltop had been a uniform expanse of green grass. This morning, it looked like a battlefield. The grass was crushed in places, burned to stubble in others. There were deep furrows dug in the earth where the lizard had rolled or dragged its heavy body across the turf. Getting down from the Greystone was harder than getting up had been. The top of the arch was about 12 feet off the ground, higher than was convenient for jumping. Normally, I wouldn't have worried about it, but in my stiff, bruised condition, I worried I'd land awkwardly and turn my ankle. Eventually, we managed it by using the strap of my travel sack as a makeshift rope. While Denna braced herself and held one end, I lowered myself down. The sack ripped wide open, of course, scattering my belongings, but I made it to the ground with nothing more serious than a grass stain. Then, Denna hung from the lip of the rock and I grabbed her legs, letting her slide down slowly. Despite the fact that I was bruised all down my front side, the experience did a lot to improve my mood. I gathered up my things and sat down with needle and thread to sew my travel sack back together. After a moment, Denna returned from her brief trip into the trees, pausing briefly to pick up the blanket we'd left below. It had several large claw rents from when the Dracus had walked over it.
"Have you ever seen one of these before?"
I asked, holding out my hand.
She raised an eyebrow at me. "How many times have I heard that one?"
Grinning, I handed her the lump of black iron I'd got from the tinker.
She looked it over curiously. "Is this a lodestone?"
"I'm surprised you recognize it."
"I knew a fellow who used one as a paperweight,"
she sighed disparagingly. "He made a special point of how, despite the fact it was so valuable and exceedingly rare, he used it as a paperweight." She sniffed. "He was a prat. Do you have any iron?"
"Fish around in there."
I pointed to my jumbled possessions. "There's bound to be something." Denna sat on one of the low graystones and played with the lodestone and a piece of broken iron buckle. I slowly sewed up my travel sack, then reattached the strap, stitching it several times so it wouldn't come loose. Denna was thoroughly engrossed by the lodestone.
"How does it work?"
she asked, pulling the buckle away and letting it snap back.
"Where does the pulling come from?"
"It's a type of galvanic force," I said, then hesitated, which is a fancy way of saying that I have no idea at all.
"I wonder if it only likes iron because it's made of iron," she mused, touching her silver ring to it with no effect. "If someone found a lodestone made of brass, would it like other brass?"
"Maybe it would like copper and zinc," I said. "That's what brass is made of." I turned the bag right side out and began packing up my things. Denna handed me back the lodestone and wandered off toward the destroyed remains of the fire pit.
"It ate all the wood before it left," she said.
I went over to look too.
The area around the fire pit was a churned-up mess. It looked like an entire legion of cavalry had ridden across it. I prodded a great piece of overturned sod turf with the toe of my boot, then bent to pick something up. "Look at this." Denna came closer, and I held something up for her to see. It was one of the Dracus's scales, smooth and black, roughly as big as my palm, and shaped like a teardrop. It was a quarter inch thick in the middle, tapering to the edges. I held it out to Denna. "For you, m'lady, a memento." She hefted it in her hand. "It's heavy," she said. "I'll go find one for you." She skipped back to prod through the remains of the fire pit. "I think it ate some of the rocks along with the wood. I know I gathered more than this to line the fire last night." "Lizards eat rocks all the time," I said. "It's how they digest their food. The rocks grind up the food in their guts." Denna eyed me skeptically. "It's true. Chickens do it too." She shook her head, looked away as she prodded in the churned-up earth. "You know, at first I was kind of hoping you would turn this encounter into a song, but the more you talk about this thing, I'm not so sure. Cows and chickens, where's your flair for the dramatic?" "It does well enough without exaggeration," I said. "That scale is mostly iron, unless I miss my guess. How can I make that more dramatic than it already is?" She held up the scale, looking at it closely. "You're kidding." I grinned at her. "The rocks around here are full of iron," I said. "The Dracus eats the rocks, and slowly they get ground down in its gizzard. The metal slowly filters into the bones and scales." I took the scale and walked over to one of the graystones. "Year after year it sheds its skin, then eats it, keeping the iron in its system. After 200 years, I tapped the scale against the stone. It made a sharp ringing sound, somewhere between a bell and a piece of glazed ceramic. I handed it back to her. "Back before modern mining, people probably hunted them for their iron. Even nowadays, I'm guessing an alchemist would pay a pretty penny for the scale or bones. Organic iron is a real rarity. They could probably do all sorts of things with it." Denna looked down at the scale in her hand. "You win. You can write the song." Her eyes lit with an idea. "Let me see the lodestone." I dug it out of my bag and handed it to her. She brought the scale close to it, and they snapped sharply together, making the same odd ceramic ring again. She grinned and walked back over to the fire pit and started pushing the lodestone through the debris, hunting for more scales. I looked out toward the northern bluffs. "I hate to be the bearer of bad news," I said, pointing off to a faint smudge of smoke rising from the trees. "But something's smoldering down there. The marker stakes I planted are gone, but I think that's the direction we saw the blue fire last night." Denna moved the lodestone back and forth over the ruins of the fire pit. "The Dracus couldn't have been responsible for what happened at the Mothin farm." She gestured at the churned-up earth and sod. "There wasn't any of this sort of wreckage there." "I'm not thinking about the farm," I said. "I'm thinking someone's patron might have been roughing it last night with a cheery little campfire." Denna's face fell. "And the Dracus saw it." "I wouldn't worry," I said quickly. "If he's as clever as you say, he's probably safe as houses." "Show me a house that's safe from that thing," she said grimly, handing me back my lodestone. "Let's go have a look." It was only a few miles to where the faint line of smoke rose from the forest, but we made bad time. We were sore and tired, and neither of us was hopeful about what we would find when we reached our destination. While we walked, we shared my last apple and half of my remaining loaf of flatbread. I cut strips of birch bark, and Denna and I both picked at them and chewed. After an hour or so, the muscles in my legs relaxed to the point where walking was no longer painful. As we got closer, our progress slowed. Rolling hills were replaced with sharp bluffs and scree-covered slopes. We had to climb or go the long way around, sometimes doubling back before we found a way through. And there were distractions.
We stumbled onto a patch of ripe ashberry that slowed us down for almost a full hour. Not long after that, we found a stream and stopped to drink and rest and wash. Again, my hope for a storybook dalliance was thwarted by the fact that the stream was only about 6 inches deep. Not ideal for proper bathing. It was early afternoon before we finally came to the source of the smoke, and what we found was not at all what we expected. It was a secluded valley tucked into the bluffs. I say valley, but in truth it was more like a gigantic steppe among the foothills. On one side was a high cliff wall of dark rock, and on the other was a sheer drop-off. Denna and I came at it from two different, unapproachable angles before we finally found a way in. Luckily, the day was windless, and the smoke rose straight as an arrow into the clear blue sky. If not for that to guide us, we probably never would have found the place. Once it had probably been a pleasant little piece of forest, but now it looked like it had been struck by a tornado. Trees were broken, uprooted, charred, and smashed. Huge furrows of exposed earth and rock were dug everywhere, as if some giant farmer had gone raving mad while plowing his field. 2 days ago, I wouldn't have been able to guess what would cause such destruction. But after what I had seen last night...
"I thought you said they were harmless," Denna said, turning to me. "It went on a rampage here."
Denna and I began to pick our way through the wreckage. The white smoke rose from the deep hole left by a large maple tree that had been tipped over. The fire was nothing more than a few coals smoldering in the bottom of the hole where the roots had been. I idly kicked a few more clods of dirt into the hole with the toe of my boot. "Well, the good news is that your patron isn't here. The bad news is..." I broke off, drawing a deeper breath. "Do you smell that?" Denna took a deep breath and nodded, wrinkling her nose. I climbed up onto the side of the fallen maple and looked around. The wind shifted, and the smell grew stronger. Something dead and rotten.
"I thought you said they don't eat meat," Denna said, looking around nervously.
I hopped down from the tree and made my way back to the cliff wall. There was a small log cabin there, smashed to flinders. The rotting smell was stronger.
"Okay," Denna said, looking over the wreckage. "This does not look harmless at all."
"We don't know if the Drakus was responsible for this," I said. "If the Chandrian attacked here, the Drakus could have been lured by the fire and caused the destruction while putting it out."
"You think the Chandrian did this?" she asked.
"That doesn't fit with anything I've ever heard of them. They're supposed to strike like lightning, then disappear. They don't visit, set some fires, then come back later to run a few errands."
I don't know what to think, but two destroyed houses. I began to sift through the wreckage.
It seems reasonable that they're related.
Denna drew in a sharp breath.
I followed her line of sight and saw the arm protruding from under several heavy logs. I moved closer. Flies buzzed up, and I covered my mouth a bit in a futile attempt to stave off the smell.
"He's been dead for about 2 span.
I bent and picked up a tangle of shattered wood and metal.
"Look at this.
"Bring it here and I'll look at it." I brought it back to where she stood. The thing was broken almost beyond recognition.
"Crossbow." "Didn't do him much good," she said.
"The question is, why did he have it in the first place?" I looked at the thick piece of blue steel that made the crossbar. "This wasn't some hunting bow. This is what you use to kill a man in armor from across a field. They're illegal."
Denna snorted. "Those sorts of laws don't get enforced out here. You know that."
I shrugged. "The fact remains that this was an expensive piece of machinery. Why would someone living in a tiny cabin with a dirt floor own a crossbow worth 10 talents?
"Maybe he knew about the Drakus," Denna said, looking around nervously. "I wouldn't mind a crossbow right about now."
I shook my head. "Drakus are shy. They stay away from people." Denna gave me a frank look, gesturing sarcastically at the wreckage of the cabin. "Think about every wild creature in the forest," I said.
All wild creatures avoid contact with people. Like you said, you've never even heard of the Dracus. There's a reason for that.
Maybe it's rabid.
That brought me up short. That's a terrifying thought. I looked around at the ruined landscape. How on earth would you put something like that down? Can a lizard even catch the froth?
Denna shifted uncomfortably from one foot to the other, looking around nervously.
Is there anything else you'd like to look at here? Because I'm done with this place. I don't want to be here when that thing gets back.
Part of me feels like we should give this fellow a decent burial.
Denna shook her head. I'm not staying here that long. We can tell someone in town and they can take care of it. It could come back at any minute.
But why? I asked. Why does it keep coming back here?
I pointed. That tree's been dead for a span of days, but that one just got torn up a couple days ago.
Why do you care? Denna asked.
The Chandrian, I said firmly. I want to know why they were here. Do they control the Dracus?
I don't think they were here, Denna said. At the Mothin Farm, maybe, but this is just the work of a rabid cow lizard.
She gave me a long look, searching my face.
I don't know what you came here looking for, but I don't think you're going to find it.
I shook my head, looking around.
I feel like this has to be connected to the farm.
I think you want it to be connected, she said gently. But this fellow's been dead a long while. You've said so yourself. And remember the door frame and the water trough at the farm?
She bent down and rapped a knuckle against one of the logs from the ruined cabin. It made a solid sound.
And look at the crossbow. The metal isn't rusted away. They weren't here.
I felt my heart sink in my chest. I knew she was right. Deep down, I knew I'd been grasping at straws. Still, it felt wrong giving up without trying everything possible.
Denna took hold of my hand.
Come on, let's go.
She smiled and tugged on me. Her hand was cool and smooth in my own.
There's more interesting things to do than hunt.
There was a loud splintering noise off in the trees.
Denna dropped my hand and turned to face the way we'd come.
No, she said. No, no, no.
The sudden threat of the Dracus brought me back into focus.
We're fine, I said, looking around. It can't climb. It's too heavy.
Climb what, a tree? It's been knocking those down for fun.
The bluffs. I pointed to the cliff wall that bordered this little section of forest.
Come on.
We scrambled to the base of the cliff, stumbling through furrows and jumping over fallen trees. Behind us, I heard the rumbling, thunder-like grunt. I darted a glance over my shoulder, but the Dracus was still nowhere among the trees. We got to the base of the cliff, and I started searching for a section both of us could climb. After a long, frantic minute, we emerged from a thick patch of sumac to find a swath of wildly churned-up dirt. The Dracus had been digging there.
Look!
Denna pointed to a break in the cliff, a deep crack about 2 feet across. It was wide enough for a person to squeeze through, but too narrow for the huge lizard. There were sharp claw marks on the cliff wall and broken rocks scattered around the churned-up earth. Denna and I squeezed into the narrow gap. It was dark, the only light coming from the narrow strip of blue sky high overhead. As I crept along, I was forced to turn sideways in places to make it through. When I brought my hands away from the walls, my palms were covered in black soot. Unable to dig its way in, apparently the Dracus had breathed fire down into the narrow passage. After only a dozen feet, the crevasse widened slightly.
There's a ladder, Denna said. I'm going up. If that thing breathes fire at us, it will be like rainwater down a gully.
She climbed, and I followed her. The ladder was crude but sturdy, and after 20 feet, it opened out onto a piece of level ground. Dark stones surrounded us on 3 sides, but there was a clear view of the ruined cabin and the destroyed trees below. A wooden box was set against the cliff wall.
"Can you see it?"
Denna asked, peering down.
"Tell me I didn't just skin my knees running from nothing."
I heard a dull whump,
and I felt a wave of hot air rise up against my back. The Dracus grunted again, and another wash of fire ran through the narrow gap below. Then there came a sudden, furious sound like nails on a slate as the Dracus clawed madly against the base of the cliff. Denna gave me a frank look. Harmless. "It's not after us," I said. "You saw. It was digging at that wall long before we ever got here." Denna sat down. "What is this place?" "Some sort of lookout," I said. "You can see the whole valley from here." "Obviously it's a lookout," she sighed. "I'm talking about the whole place." I opened the wooden box that was up against the cliff wall. Inside was a rough wool blanket, a full water skin, some dried meat, and a dozen wickedly sharp crossbow bolts. "I don't know either," I admitted. "Maybe the fellow was a fugitive." The noise stopped below. Denna and I peered out over the ruined valley. Eventually, the Dracus moved away from the cliff. It walked slowly, its huge body digging an irregular rut into the ground. "It's not moving as quickly as it did last night," I said. "Maybe it is sick. Maybe it's tired from a hard day's trying to track us down and kill us." She looked up at me. "Sit down, you're making me nervous. We're not going anywhere for a while." I sat down and we watched the Dracus make its plodding way to the middle of the valley. It went up to a tree about 30 feet tall and pushed it over without any noticeable effort. Then it began to eat it, leaves first. Next, it crunched up branches thick as my wrist as easily as a sheep would tear up a mouthful of grass. When the trunk was finally stripped bare, I assumed it would have to stop. But it simply clamped its huge, flat mouth down on one end of the trunk and twisted its massive neck. The trunk splintered and broke, leaving the Dracus with a large but manageable mouthful that it bolted down more or less whole. Denna and I took the opportunity to eat some lunch of our own. Just some flatbread, sausage, and the rest of my carrots. I was hesitant to trust the food in the box, as there was the distinct possibility that the fellow living here had been some manner of crazy. "It still amazes me that no one around here has ever seen it," Denna said. "People have probably caught glimpses," I said. "The swineherd said everyone knows there's something dangerous in these woods. They probably just assumed it was a demon or some nonsense like that." Denna glanced back at me, an amused curl to her mouth. "Says the fellow who came to town looking for the Chandrian." "That's different," I protested hotly. "I don't go around spouting fairy stories and touching iron. I'm here so I can learn the truth, so I can have information that comes from somewhere more reliable than third-hand stories." "I didn't mean to touch a nerve," Denna said, taken aback. She looked back down below. "It really is an incredible animal." "When I read about it, I didn't really believe about the fire," I admitted. "It seemed a little far-fetched to me." "More far-fetched than a lizard big as a horse cart?" "That's just a matter of size. But fire isn't a natural thing. If nothing else, where does it keep the fire? It's obviously not burning inside."
"Didn't they explain it in that book you read?" Denna asked.
"The author had some guesses, but that's all. He couldn't catch one to dissect it."
"Understandable," Denna said as she watched the Dracus casually nudge over another tree and begin eating that one as well. "What sort of a net or cage would hold it?"
"He had some interesting theories, though," I said. "You know how cow manure gives off a gas that burns?" Denna turned to look at me and laughed.
"No.
Really?" I nodded, grinning. "Farm kids will strike sparks onto a fresh cow pat and watch it burn. That's why farmers have to be careful about storing manure. The gas can build up and explode."
"I'm a city girl," she said, chuckling. "We didn't play those sorts of games."
"You missed some big fun," I said. "The author suggested that the Dracus just stores that gas in a bladder of some kind. The real question is how it lights the gas.
The author has a clever idea about arsenic, which makes sense chemically. Arsenic and coal gas will explode if you put them together. That's how you get marsh lights in swamps. But I think that's a little unreasonable. If it had that much arsenic in its body, it would poison itself.
Mm-hmm, Denna said, still watching the Dracus below.
But if you think about it, all it needs is a tiny spark to ignite the gas, I said, and there are plenty of animals that can create enough galvanic force for a spark. Clip eels, for example, can generate enough to kill a man, and they're only a couple of feet long. I gestured toward the Dracus. Something that big could certainly generate enough for a spark. I was hoping that Denna would be impressed by my ingenuity, but she seemed distracted by the scene below. You're not really listening to me, are you?
Not so much, she said, turning to me and giving a smile.
I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. It eats wood. Wood burns. Why wouldn't it breathe fire? While I tried to think of a response to that, she pointed down into the valley.
Look at the trees down there. Do they look odd to you?
Aside from being destroyed and mostly eaten? I asked. Not particularly.
Look how they're arranged. It's hard to see because the place is in a shambles, but it looks like they were growing in rows, like someone planted them.
Now that she pointed it out, it did look like a large section of the trees had been in rows before the Dracus came, a dozen rows with a score of trees each. Most of them were now only stumps or empty holes.
Why would someone plant trees in the middle of a forest? She mused. It's not an orchard. Did you see any fruit?
I shook my head.
And those trees are the only ones the Dracus has been eating, she said. There's the big clear spot in the middle. The others he knocks down, but those he knocks down and eats.
She squinted.
What kind of tree is it eating right now?
I can't tell from here, I said. Maple? Does it have a sweet tooth?
We looked for a while longer, then Denna got to her feet.
Well, the important thing is that it's not going to run over and breathe fire down our backs. Let's go see what's at the other end of that narrow path. I'm guessing it's a way out of here.
We headed down the ladder and made our slow, winding way along the bottom of the tiny crevasse. It twisted and turned for another 20 feet before opening up into a tiny box canyon with steep walls rising away on every side. There was no way out, but it was obviously being put to some use. The place had been cleared of plants, leaving a packed dirt floor. Two long fire pits had been dug, and resting over the pits on brick platforms were large metal pans. They almost resembled the rendering vats that knackers used for tallow. But these were wide, flat, and shallow, like baking pans for enormous pies.
It does have a sweet tooth, Denna laughed. This fellow was making maple candy here. Or syrup.
I moved closer to look. There were buckets laying around, of the sort that could carry maple sap so it could be boiled down. I opened the door of a tiny ramshackle shed and saw more buckets, long wooden paddles for stirring the sap, scrapers for getting it out of the pans. But it didn't feel right. There were plenty of maple trees in the forest. It didn't make sense to cultivate them. And why pick such an out-of-the-way place? Maybe the fellow was simply crazy. Idly, I picked up one of the scrapers and looked at it. The edge was smeared dark, like it had been scraping tar.
Ick! Denna said behind me. Bitter! I think they burned it.
I turned around and saw Denna standing by one of the fire pits. She had pried a large disc of sticky material out of the bottom of one of the pans and taken a bite out of it. It was black, not the deep amber color of maple candy. I suddenly realized what was really going on here.
Don't!
She looked at me, puzzled.
It's not that bad, she said, her words muffled through her sticky mouthful. It's strange, but not really unpleasant.
I stepped over to her and knocked it out of her hand,
Her eyes flashed angrily at me.
"Spit it out!" I snapped. "Now! It's poison!"
Her expression went from angry to terrified in a flash. She opened her mouth and let the wad of dark stuff fall to the ground. Then she spat, her saliva thick and black. I pressed my water bottle into her hands.
"Rinse your mouth out," I said. "Rinse and spit it out."
She took the bottle, and then I remembered it was empty. We'd finished it during lunch. I took off running, scrambling through the narrow passage. I darted up the ladder, grabbed the water skin, then down and back to the small canyon. Denna was sitting on the canyon floor, looking very pale and wide-eyed. I thrust the water skin into her hands and she gulped so quickly that she choked, then gagged a bit as she spat it out. I reached into the fire pit, pushing my hand deep into the ashes until I found the unburned coals underneath. I brought up a handful of unburned charcoal. I shook my hand, scattering most of the ashes away, then thrust the handful of black coals at her.
"Eat this," I said.
She looked at me blankly.
"Do it!"
I shook the handful of coals at her.
"If you don't chew this up and swallow it, I'll knock you out and force it down your throat."
I put some in my own mouth.
"Look, it's fine. Just do it."
My tone softened, became more pleading than commanding.
"Denna, trust me."
She took some coals and put them in her mouth. Face pale and eyes beginning to brim with tears, she gritted up a mouthful and took a drink of water to wash it down, grimacing.
"They're harvesting goddamn Ophalum here," I said. "I'm an idiot for not seeing it sooner."
Denna started to say something, but I cut her off.
"Don't talk. Keep eating, as much as you can stomach."
She nodded solemnly, her eyes wide. She chewed, choked a little, and swallowed the charcoal with another mouthful of water. She ate a dozen mouthfuls in quick succession, then rinsed her mouth out again.
"What's Ophalum?"
she asked softly.
"A drug. Those are Denner trees. You just had a whole mouthful of Denner resin."
I sat down next to her. My hands were shaking. I lay them flat against my legs to hide it. She was quiet at that. Everyone knew about Denner resin. In Tarbian, the knackers had to come for the stiff bodies of sweet-eaters that overdosed in the dockside alleys and doorways.
"How much did you swallow?" I asked.
"I was just chewing it like toffee." Her face went pale again.
"There's still some stuck in my teeth."
I touched the water skin. "Keep rinsing." She swished the water from cheek to cheek before spitting and repeating the process. I tried to guess at how much of the drug she'd gotten into her system, but there were too many variables. I didn't know how much she had swallowed, how refined this resin was, if the farmers had taken any steps to filter or purify it. Her mouth worked as her tongue felt around her teeth.
"Okay, I'm clean."
I forced a laugh.
"You're anything but clean," I said. "Your mouth is all black. You look like a kid that's been playing in the coal bin."
"You aren't much better," she said. "You look like a chimney sweep." She reached out to touch my bare shoulder. I must have torn my shirt against the rocks in my rush to get the water skin. She gave a wan smile that didn't touch her frightened eyes at all.
"Why do I have a belly full of coals?"
"Charcoal is like a chemical sponge," I said. "It soaks up drugs and poisons." She brightened a little.
"All of them?"
I considered lying, then thought better of it.
"Most.
You got it into you pretty quickly. It will soak up a lot of what you swallowed."
"How much?"
"About 6 parts in 10, I said. "Hopefully a little more. How do you feel?"
"Scared,"
she said. "Shaky, but other than that, no different." She shifted nervously where she sat and put her hand on the sticky disc of resin I'd knocked away from her earlier. She flicked it away and wiped her hand nervously on her pants.
"How long will it be before we know?"
"I don't know how much they refined it," I said. "If it's still raw, it will take longer to work its way into your system, which is good, as the effects will be spread out over a longer period of time." I felt for her pulse in her neck. It was racing, which didn't tell me anything. Mine was racing, too. "Look up here,"
I gestured with my raised hand and watched her eyes. Her pupils were sluggish, responding to the light. I lay my hand on her head, and under the pretext of lifting her eyelid a little, I pressed my finger against the bruise on her temple, hard. She didn't flinch or show the least hint that it pained her.
"I thought I was imagining it before," Denna said, looking up at me. "But your eyes really do change color. Normally they're bright green with a ring of gold around the inside."
"I got them from my mother," I said.
"But I've been watching. When you broke the pump handle yesterday, they went dull green, muddy. And when the swineherd made that comment about the roux, they went dark for just a moment. I thought it was just the light, but now I can see it's not."
"I'm surprised you noticed," I said. "The only other person to ever point it out was an old teacher of mine. And he was an arcanist, which means it's pretty much his job to notice things."
"Well, it's my job to notice things about you." She cocked her head a bit. "People probably are distracted by your hair. It's so bright. It's pretty. Pretty distracting. And your face is really expressive. You're always in control of it, even the way your eyes behave. But not the color." She gave a faint smile. "They're pale now, like green frost. You must be terribly afraid."
"I'm guessing it's old-fashioned lust," I said in my roughest tones. "It's not often a beautiful girl lets me get this close to her."
"You always tell me the most beautiful lies," she said, looking away from me and down to her hands. "Am I going to die?"
"No," I said firmly. "Absolutely not."
"Could..."
She looked up at me and smiled again, her eyes wet but not overflowing.
"Could you just say it out loud for me?"
"You aren't going to die," I said, getting to my feet. "Come on, let's see if our lizard friend is gone yet." I wanted to keep her moving around and distracted, so we each had another little drink and headed back to the lookout. The Dracus lay sleeping in the sun. I took the opportunity to stuff the blanket and the dried meat into my travel sack. "I felt guilty about stealing from the dead before," I said, "but now..."
"At least now we know why he was hiding in the middle of nowhere with a crossbow and a lookout and all that," Dennis said. "A minor mystery solved."
I started to fasten up my travel sack, then as an afterthought, packed the crossbow bolts as well.
"What are those for?" she asked.
"They're worth something," I said. "I'm in debt to a dangerous person. I could use every penny." I trailed off, my mind working. Denna looked at me, and I could see her mind jumping to the same conclusion.
"Do you know how much that resin would be worth?" she asked.
"Not really," I said, thinking about the 30 pans, each with a wafer of black, sticky resin congealed in the bottom, big as a dinner plate.
"I'm guessing a lot. An awful lot."
Denna shifted back and forth on her feet.
"Quoth, I don't know how I feel about this. I've seen girls get hooked on this stuff. I need money."
She gave a bitter laugh.
"I don't even have a second set of clothes right now."
She looked worried.
"But I don't know if I need it this badly."
"I'm thinking of apothecaries," I said quickly. "They'd refine it into medicine. It's a powerful painkiller. The price won't be nearly as good as if we went to the other sort of people, but still, half a loaf." Denna smiled broadly.
"I'd love half a loaf, especially since my cryptic prick of a patron seems to have disappeared."
We headed back down into the canyon. This time, as I emerged from the narrow passageway, I saw the evaporating pans in a different light. Now each of them was the equivalent of a heavy coin in my pocket. Next term's tuition, new clothes, freedom from my debt with Devi. I saw Denna looking at the trays with the same fascination, though hers was somewhat more glassy-eyed than mine.
"I could live comfortably for a year off this," she said, "and not be beholden to anyone."
I went to the tool shed and grabbed a scraper for each of us. At the end of a few minutes' work, We had combined all of the black sticky pieces into a single wad the size of a sweet melon. She shivered a bit, then looked at me, smiling. Her cheeks were flushed. "I suddenly feel really good." She crossed her arms across her chest, rubbing her hands up and down. "Really, really good. I don't think it's just the thought of all that money." "It's the resin," I said. "It's a good sign that it's taken this long to hit you. I'd have been worried if it happened sooner." I gave her a serious look. "Now listen. You need to let me know if you feel any heaviness in your chest or have any trouble breathing. So long as neither of those things happen, you should be fine." Denna nodded, then drew a deep breath and let it out again. "Sweet angel Ordal above, I feel great." She gave me an anxious expression, but the wide grin kept spilling out. "Am I going to get addicted from this?" I shook my head, and she sighed with relief. "You know the damnedest thing? I'm scared about getting addicted, but I don't care that I'm scared. I've never felt like this before. No wonder our big scaly friend keeps coming back for more." "Merciful Talu," I said. "I didn't even think of that. That's why it was trying to claw its way in here. It can smell the resin. It's been eating the trees for 2 span, 3 or 4 a day. The biggest sweet eater of them all coming back to get his fix." Denna laughed, then her expression went horrified. "How many trees were left?" 2 or 3, I said, thinking of the rows of empty holes and broken stumps. "But it may have eaten another since we've been back here." "Have you ever seen a sweet eater when they've got the hunger on them?" Denna said, her face stricken. "They go crazy." "I know," I said, thinking of the girl I'd seen in Tarbian, dancing naked in the snow. "What do you think it's going to do when the trees run out?" I thought for a long moment. "It's going to go looking for more, and it's going to be desperate, and it knows the last place where it found the trees had a little house that smelled like people. We're going to have to kill it." "Kill it?" She laughed, then pressed her hands against her mouth again. "With nothing but my good singing voice and your manly bravado?" She started to giggle uncontrollably, despite the fact that she was holding both her hands in front of her mouth. "God, I'm sorry, Quoth. How long am I going to be like this?" "I don't know. The effects of Ophalum are euphoria." "Check!" She winked at me, grinning. "Followed by mania. Some delirium if your dose was high enough. Then exhaustion." "Maybe I'll sleep through the night for once," she said. "You can't seriously expect to kill this thing. What are you going to use, a pointy stick?" "I can't just let it run wild. Traben's only about 5 miles from here, and there's smaller farms closer than that. Think of the damage it would do." "But how?" she repeated. "How do you kill a thing like that?" I turned to the tiny shed. "If we're lucky, this fellow had the good sense to buy a spare crossbow." I began to dig around, throwing stuff out of the door. Stirring paddles, buckets, scrapers, spade, more buckets, a barrel. The barrel was about the size of a small keg of ale. I carried it outside the shed and pried off the lid. In the bottom was an oilcloth sack containing a large, gummy mass of black Denna resin, at least 4 times as much as Denna and I had already scraped together. I pulled out the sack and rested it on the ground, holding it open for Denna to look. She peered in, gasped, then jumped up and down a little bit. "Now I can buy a pony," she said, laughing. "I don't know about a pony," I said, doing some calculations in my head. "But I think before we split up the money, we should buy you a good half harp out of this," I said. "Not some sad liar." "Yes," Denna said. Then she threw her arms around me in a wild, delighted hug. "And we'll get you..." She looked at me curiously, her sooty face inches away from my own. "What do you want?" Before I could say anything, do anything, the Dracus roared.